You're a dad.
Yeah.
Do you ever invite Jack to participate in something just because of your relationship with him and how it affects him and your relationship with him?
I do.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah. Invite him to play games with me sometimes. So, and just because I like him, mostly checkers. He's gotten really good at checkers to the point where he can beat me. And yeah, I invite him in.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just because he's useful in that process?
No, it's true.
So I would estimate that sometimes it is okay for God to just ask us to do something.
Speaking of going, you're listening to Speaking of Going, a podcast about life, friendship, our hope, and how Christ's love compels us to go to forgotten communities around the globe. And because we've experienced Christ's love, we cannot help but speak about what we have seen and heard.
Hey, you're listening to Speaking of Going. My name is Ben, or Ban, or Bun, depending on where you live in the world or the country. And I am formerly a reluctant missionary, as my mom corrected me, and also you, Randy.
I'm glad that I have your mom's support. I'm Randy, or Randall, depending on which part of the world you're from, and I'm formerly an atheist, and I'm currently a missionary leader.
That is awesome. What is your morning routine like?
I'm not a person that has many routines. A lot of my friends in my life have referred to me as Random Fairman, because it seems like my routine and almost everything changes almost all the time. But for the last 3 or 4 years, almost every day, I'll get up in the morning and I'll put a pound of greens and a pound of mixed berries into a blender, and I'll mix
something
it.
That would kill the average stomach.
So this is literally a pound of mixed greens and a lemon. You have to add the lemon for it to really be good.
Of course.
So there's one lemon, 1 pound of mixed greens, and 1 pound of mixed berries. Blend it up, put it into a bottle, and then go out my front door immediately and start walking. And so I'll carry my morning power with me, and I talk to Jesus. And so
that's really cool.
Let's see, this morning, lately here, I've been looking up at the stars, and so I've learned where, you know, 5 constellations are and talked to God about them. And
well, that's cool.
One unique thing that I've found about my morning walk with Jesus is, in my first mile, I always try to talk about my emotion. Like, how do I feel? Okay, God, the way I feel this morning is guilty, or the way I feel this morning is nervous. Or I try to talk with God about my emotion, because I tend to be unaware of how I feel, but he helps me understand how I feel and sometimes why I feel that way.
That's interesting, because you're pretty into how other people feel. Do you find yourself being capable of sensing how other people feel?
Oh, that's a good point. I am. It's definitely from some of the stuff of my home of origin makes me particularly alert to how other people are feeling. So I would say that I'm way above average in sort of
senses.
Looking at somebody's eyes and knowing what they're feeling. And I'm
even through a computer screen.
And I'm way below average at looking at myself and figuring out how I feel.
Mm-hmm. My morning routine is always coffee and a giant bowl. Are you ready for this? Of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh, I bet that changes when you're 50.
And only when I'm in America. And also will change most likely when I'm 50. Oh, yeah. And I've recently been going on a walk to spend time with Jesus. And I've kind of adapted your methodology. And I found it really rewarding. There's something about getting out early and going on a walk. It gets the brain and the heart going. I will say, normally it's only about 1 or 2 days a week that I can pull that off, but usually that's my morning routine.
So When you talk with Jesus, does it make sound waves or is it inside your head?
It's inside my head. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's a whisper. Sometimes I'll catch myself and my mouth moving, but I immediately look around to see if someone's looking at me and I go back to my head.
So for me, what I found is I have a really hard time telling the difference between talking to God and just thinking about stuff unless I make words. So
well, it makes sense.
A part of the reason I originally started going out for this walk is because when I was at home, I was always thinking, can my wife hear me? Or can the other people around here hear me? Mm-hmm. And it's like sometimes I don't want them hearing what I say to God.
It's true.
So for me, the walk is my, it's, you know, Jesus gave this idea. He said, when you pray, go into the inner room and shut the door so that so that only you will know. I suppose I just messed this up by putting it in the podcast, didn't I? So now the whole world knows, you know, because actually we have more than 300 million listeners and they're all going to know.
Yeah, we just opened up Randy's closet.
Oh, I probably don't get any credit anymore.
Speaking of getting up, you sent me this passage with Philip and the Ethiopian. Philip got up and he went. What are you thinking about it?
You know, we're here in Acts 8:26 is where it starts in case someone wants to look at it. But it was a few things there. One of them was there's this angel of the Lord that says to Philip, get up and go south. To the road, he tells him where to go, to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. And just as I try to put myself in Philip's shoes, I think, what is the real message from God that I'm receiving? So, I mean, obviously the straightforward message is get up and go south. And how he even told him how far to go south.
Yeah.
But, what are all the unstated implications that are buried in that directive? Do you have any ideas?
Yeah. Well, especially going to a desert place, as it's indicated. I mean, the unspoken, the first thing I thought of was, did he have like a go bag? I mean, that's not really probably where your head was going with this, but I was just thinking, was he prepared in any way? Did he have a bag? Did he have water? Like, what? How long was he going? What was he doing? Where was his mind at? You know, what was he thinking was around the corner? What was the first step even? He probably started mapping out his travel plans. How does one get from point A to point B?
That's an interesting thought. So when I read the take on it, it sounds to me like he was either sleeping and the angel came into a dream, or he was sitting and an angel came somehow and told him, get up and go south. And then it says, and he got up and he went. So I just had it in my mind that basically he had his sandals and his man skirt and he just got up and he went.
His mert? His man skirt?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But I've seen the children's version of it. And, you know, the Jewish people always have their man skirt on in some the children's version that I saw. But, I mean, true. I don't know.
It's probably accurate.
So
I mean, he had to. I mean, obviously, he's being told to get up. So he's in some sort of non-upward position.
So do you think he has any assumptions about why he's going south?
I don't think he knows anything outside of the Lord. An angel of the Lord has told me to do this. It must be that there is something there for me. That's kind of the only assumption I can make.
I think that's where I am too, is that this isn't a random get up and go south to this particular desert place. This is a get up and go south to this particular desert place for some purpose. It feels to me like Philip probably expects that there is a purpose in this trip. But as far as the text goes, it's not actually been explained.
Yeah, it's true.
So in order to have a purpose on this trip, what are some of the reasonable assumptions that Philip might make?
He might be expecting to hear again. So that's probably the first thing, is that I'm doing this and I'll probably hear something again, or at least, at the very least, he needs to be listening, right? He needs to be listening and watching.
So if I was going to, so it sounds like you're saying one of his expectations will be somehow there's further information coming.
I think so. Yeah.
It might be my experience. It might be that when I see it, I know. It might be some further impression. But somehow I'm expecting that there's more information.
Yeah.
What else might he reasonably expect?
I think he would expect for whoever or whatever is there to be in some sort of process of preparation, and that so this has a lot to do with, you know, he is sovereign and he knows people's hearts and he's working in different ways. And so I think Philip might expect that he's preparing some type of groundwork before he gets to wherever it is that he's supposed to go.
So somehow God knows more than, he would expect that God knows more than him.
Yeah, so his expectations would be, I don't know enough. Surely God, who's above all and in all, knows what I'm to do and who I'm to meet. And if they've done some sort of work in the process.
Yeah, there's some way that God has prepared somebody or some circumstance, or God knows about a circumstance, or somehow, some way.
Yeah, I think those are reasonable expectations. Can you think of any others?
One of the things that I kind of, on my walk this morning, I was asking myself was, what are the categories of purposes that God might have for me? So if I was Philip walking south, and I thought, what are the categories of purposes God might have? And so I thought, well, maybe the reason I'm going is because of something God wants to do in me. Like maybe the reason I'm going there is that I'm going to get eaten by a lion on the way, and and this is the way God's calling me home. So it might be somehow about me and God's journey for me.
That's true.
And then it might be about my future ministry, or the things that I'm going to do in the future. I mean, maybe I'm going down there to discover something about the future path that God has for me, or what I'm supposed to do, or my contribution. And it may be that I'm going down there to make a difference to somebody else. That there's somebody or some circumstance there where somebody else needs to know something about God that I know. And so if I'm Philip and I'm walking down there, that's the kind of things that would be swimming around in my head, is like, I'm looking for God to be at work here. Is it about me? Is it about somebody else? Is it about the future? What is it?
Do you think that's okay? That if you go to a place because the Lord's called you, and you know, it ends up only being about you and maybe how you're growing or something like that?
Well, you're a dad.
Yeah.
Do you ever invite Jack to participate in something just because of your relationship with him and how it affects him and your relationship with him?
I do.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah. Invite him to play games with me sometimes. So, and just because I like him, mostly checkers. He's gotten really good at checkers to the point where he can beat me. And yeah, I invite him in.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just because he's useful in that process?
No, it's true.
So I would estimate that sometimes it is okay for God to just ask us to do something.
I actually knew the answer to that question, but I didn't necessarily know why.
Yeah.
And so I think you explaining that why really helps. That's cool.
I hadn't really thought through it either. It was a random interchange there. It was not a teaching moment for me. It was part of what God had prepared this morning in advance that I really didn't know why I was there.
There you go.
So in this particular passage, it's like God has given us a zoom lens where, mm-hmm. first of all, we're looking at Philip and his experience, and then we just process some of his reasonable expectations. And then he zooms out and he shows us how he's fulfilling those reasonable expectations that Philip may or may not have had.
Yeah.
So then he goes on, he says, so Philip rose and went, and then he explains, there's an Ethiopian, a eunuch, a court official of Candace, the queen of the Ethiopians. He was in charge of all of her treasure. So he's just describing who the person is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot of ways that God was already at work in his life. And then it says he'd come to Jerusalem to worship. And he was returning, seated in his chariot, and he was reading the prophet Isaiah. So to me, God is graciously showing us,
oh yeah,
the picture of the scenario that he has prepared to happen at that place where he's sending Philip.
Yeah, I mean, before Philip even knows that, you know, who this is, we get this massive description. I mean, that's a really big description, like, who he is, you know, what his physical nature potentially is, how much he's trusted. That's the first thing I thought of, was like, oh wait, he's in charge of all the queen's treasure. That's got to be some sort of trusted high status, like he has a lot. And he'd gone to worship. So he has a lot and he's still seeking the Lord in some way. By traveling, going to a new place.
It does seem like when it says he had come to Jerusalem to worship, it seems like somehow God has already been involved in his life on some level. There must be mm-hmm. some reason that he traveled to Jerusalem to worship, that he was motivated by.
Mm-hmm.
By that somehow.
Yeah, I mean, internally, I think there was some sort of thing that's like, I've got to get to this place. These people seem spiritual, maybe. I don't know. Or maybe he had heard of this God that, you know, parts waters, and he wanted to go and see. I don't know.
You know, back then, my understanding is the scroll, the Isaiah prophet would have been written on a scroll, and it mm-hmm. wouldn't have been very cheap. It would have been...
He had some monies, you know what I'm saying?
He had some money, but he also was willing to use that money.
Use it on that. Yeah, it's true.
On a scroll of the prophet Isaiah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It's like, it's hard. I was thinking the other day, you know, back then people read aloud. And I guess I used to read that and think, that's kind of weird. Why is he reading out loud? And then it occurred to me that people have done that probably most of existence. It wasn't, you know, for us to sit and be silent and read, it's just, it's not so normal in human history. I found that funny. People around him probably listening. I also thought, like, are the people around him who are obviously hearing him? I mean, my assumption is he's not solo. What do you think? Am I crazy? I mean, it's hard to know. We can't tell. I'm inferring a lot here, but
you know, I haven't thought about this scene, but yeah. Somebody with that kind of influence, my instinct is there would be an entourage. But when mm-hmm. I have pictured it, when I've pictured it in my mind, I pictured him alone in a wheeled vehicle that has mm-hmm. one bench. And he's sitting on the bench driving it himself, and then Philip gets up into it. And I have to say, I don't think that's really the way it is. I think there are other people around, but I'm just being honest that I've had a children's cartoon fiction version in my mind.
Yeah, I don't know.
So
we're just a couple of experts guessing around here.
So God chose a mechanism to speak to Philip, mm-hmm. which was an angel of the Lord in this particular area. So later on, he uses other ways to speak. But in this particular case, he uses an angel. You think that is just like ancient stuff and that God doesn't, do you think God still uses angels to speak, or is that strictly like historical ancient stuff and God's better than that now?
Yeah, I mean, I think he does. For me, I would struggle to think of a time. Can you think of a time where an angel has spoken to you?
You know, this is complicated because I can say there was a time in history when I was in bed and I believed that an angel spoke to me. Now, if I go back in my own history and I say, do I still have confidence? The only confidence I have today is to be able to say, back then I believed it was an angel, but it's not so fresh in my mind. But I remember we had been, so I tend to be a person that thinks about the future a lot. So I tend to be very focused. I'll be having a conversation with Ben, and my instinct a lot of time is to think about the fact that it's currently 7:54 and I need to leave by 8:05. Otherwise, I'm not going to make it to work on time. And so I tend to focus in on the future. I tend to have three conversations going on. There's the conversation with the person, the conversation with myself, and the conversation with the Lord. So I tend to be operating this way. And this one, I had been living in this Central Asian city for a year and a half. And I was in this habit of thinking about, okay, if we're not allowed to be here anymore, what comes next? And as I'm talking to somebody, what is the purpose that God has in this conversation? And there was these multiple conversations going on. And I kind of sanctified that as if it was good. I believed that somehow that was godly and more godly than my wife, perhaps. And my wife, it seems like when she talks to somebody, that's the only person in the world. And she wouldn't even know that she has to leave in 10 minutes, that she is just with one person. And probably on some level, I thought that my way was more godly than her way, perhaps. I don't know. But I woke up in the morning, I was sitting there, and I believed at the time, and I still think it's probably true, but we'll find out in heaven, that an angel spoke to me. And he said, Randy, if you're going to be useful in this kind of work, you're going to have to slow down and love the person who's right in front of you. And it was such a strong impression that I got up and I went to the living room and I sat down on the couch and I said, God, is that really you? And I wrote down the dream and I put it into a prayer letter to my friends back home, and I asked them to pray. Now, I come from a pretty conservative background. And so when I came home on home assignment later, one of the pastors at the church said, Randy, I really had to do some damage control with the elders because now you're starting to talk about God speaking through angels and dreams and stuff, and we don't really go there. But in that particular case, I guess I still do think probably it was an angel of the Lord that was sent to Randy Fairman to say, if you're going to be useful, you're going to have to slow down and listen to the person and love the person right in front of you. So that's my one brush with an angel.
It seems like a strong way to give somebody a message. I mean, at least from what you're saying, it seems like you were very affected, and anything less would have been potentially confusing, as you were already kind of justifying your behavior as good. And so I wonder, you know, what about Philip? And could there have been something, would a lesser thing have worked? I find it a very vivid imagery here. An angel had to come in and break through.
You just gave me a fresh idea on this because, you know, in what we'll talk about in our next follow-up podcast is about the Spirit and how the Spirit gave Philip an impression. And I would say that my experience of God's Spirit has been more in the arena of impressions.
Yeah, likewise.
And I've said something in the past, like, it's easy to confuse the Spirit with the sandwich that I had for breakfast. Mm-hmm. Whereas that experience that I had that I thought was an angel was a strong statement, a clear statement, and something that gave me such clear instruction that there was only a question of to obey or not to obey. And I guess that's the case here too, is that there's a clear direction. Do this. And yeah, that's an interesting way to send a message.
Yeah.
So as you think through the discussion we've had today and try to think through what it might mean to somebody who's considering going into mission, what are some of the things that you think they might be valuable for them?
I think to start with the assumption that God is at work in preparing. I think to also start with the assumption that, you know, you as a person, we as people, are people that are capable from hearing in a big way from God, and that it's not, you know, some fairy tale in some children's book story where, you know, an angel comes down and it's glowing and you have on the man skirt or whatever it is that, and you're laying down, you know. I think that it could be that, you know, you talked about impression. It could just be that the Lord has made something very clear and evident to you. And that's good enough. It isn't, I mean, what we have here is we have this angel, and you spoke of an angel. I mean, I've also had a dream in the past where I felt like the Lord was telling me to go and to not stop. And it was the most vivid dream I've ever had. And I woke up and I was the most motivated I've ever been to go and not stop. And it had been after a period of really frustration with a newborn kid and wondering if I could even handle going overseas with a new baby. Wasn't getting any sleep. And so it was just very clear, this is what I have to do next, and this is what we need to do. So yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. To me, that makes sense in my head. That's kind of what I've learned from listening to you and listening to this story.
So I think what you're saying makes sense. And just as I'm pondering you and me, your story, my story, and a whole bunch of other people that come through SIM USA, I think that one key point is there's a lot of people who have had a clear statement that they should go. And then they're kind of, I'm thinking of one businessman and his wife. I don't have permission to use their name, but I've been working with one particular businessman and his wife who just sold a company, and it's a big company. And he said, "Randy, I have a clear sense that God's calling me to work with SIM, but I don't really know what the contribution looks like. I don't really know the next thing." And that kind of story, whether it's I've heard this sermon and I believe God's telling me to go, but I don't know what to do next. That God tends to give people something really concrete to follow without really being clear what they're going to accomplish in that process. And I think the trust and belief that God has prepared something, somebody, some situation, and that even if it seems vague, where you're just going in a general direction until you reach a certain point and you got to keep your eyes open, I've seen that it's hard. It's hard to accept that I must trust that God will use me in my own life or in the lives of others or in the circumstances where he is already at work, and we're going to come alongside him and join up with whatever it is that he has for us, because he's given us clarity that the next step is to go. Mm-hmm. Father, I thank you for this conversation today. I thank you for speaking with clarity to Ben and to me and to Philip. I thank you for guiding this Ethiopian eunuch and so many other people that you guide to put them into a position to intersect with those that you've given instruction to. And yeah, I do pray, Father, for this one couple I talked about, that you'd give them the kind of distinct clarity about what this next season, where what direction is south and how far should they go before they step in. I mean, it's hard, Father. And I pray that you'd give them clarity and allow them to know how far to go. In the name of Jesus, amen.
Have you ever considered becoming a cross-cultural worker? Convinced that no one should live and die without hearing God's good news, we believe that he has called us to make disciples of the Lord Jesus Christ in communities where he is least known. Visit us at simusa.org/connect to talk to someone about serving in mission. This has been an SIM USA production.